You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode of Blue Shirts Breakaway is brought to you by you, the fans. That's right. Go to patreon.com/blueshirtsbreakaway today to get access to our BSBOTs, our Discord, which is absolutely insane, ad-free episodes, and much more. Today we have Vince Mercogliano of Lowhood.com. You've probably heard of him before as well. He covers the Rangers. He's a beat writer. Pretty big-time deal. And we talk about the post-deadline trades and what has happened. And then also, Greg and I discuss Matt Rempe and a lot more. So, without further ado, here is our dear friend Mark Messier, and let us start the show!
Hi everybody, it's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Welcome to the Bush Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Meter, here with my co-host, Greg Kaplan. Gregory, say hello.
I'm going to start us off with the only bit of bad news we have from tonight's game, okay? This is the only negative thing we're going to say on a Monday night.
I think this is for you, right? I might say more things.
You really have negative things? Interesting.
Just Matt Rampy's elbow, but continue.
Oh, okay. Fair. I forgot about that. Vincent Trocheck, 3 shots on goal. Chris Kreider had a point. Alexis Lafreniere, only 1 shot on goal. We once again failed the people.
But I think this is fair. This is a good starting point and topic as well. Is Lafreniere cursed? I mean, let's start. Because he had what is one of the best passes I've seen probably all season from any Ranger. Just an amazing backhand across ice there. Tim Panarin, who buries it home. And Vincent Trocheck, who's not involved in the play literally at all, is offsides and it's called off. Not that it matters. It is legitimately offsides. But then later, Lafreniere goes and hits the bar on like a sweet shot. Totally cursed. Didn't count as a shot, though. So there you go.
I know. You know what? That always bothers me because I get it. It's technically, if it was a shot on goal, it goes in the goal. So you can't call a puck that hits the post or the crossbar a shot on goal. But it should count as something. I don't know if it's like a half. I don't know, Ryan. It feels dirty. That it just goes in the books as missing the net and nothing else.
They call it the post meter. Look, dude, the Devils had 5 power plays tonight.
Including a 5-minute major.
That is
that
correct.
We will get into.
Let's get into it now. During one of this 5-minute major, and this is going to lead us to the trade deadline. And don't worry, we talked the entire trade deadline with our guest today, Vince. We break the whole thing down, so you'll get plenty of that talk. But for right now, during that 5-minute major, of which we'll get into how we got there, which with one of the most incredible sequences I've ever seen. The Rangers allowed 1 shot on goal. Tonight they allowed 1 goal, I believe, on something around 21 shots. They controlled the pace of play yet again. The Devils are in a free fall right now. We understand this. The St. Louis Blues are also not exactly playing inspiring hockey. But these were 2 games where, look, man, I know Nemec or Nemec, however you want to say his name. You know where you are. You're in a safe place. Scored with, I don't know, 2 minutes left as soon as they pulled Kaapo Kähkönen, no relation to Kaapo Kakko, according to Sam Rosen.
Amazing line.
Stunner.
Every now and then, Sam reminds us why he's a Hall of Famer. Incredible. He's
an absolute stunner. But they scored, but these last 2 games, I can't really remember. I know there's been a time, and someone will correct me. I can't really remember. I've seen 2 games in a row where I've been, like, my stress level has never really gone above a 2.
Yeah, I was texting with our buddy Jeff. Obviously, biggest Devils fan we know, our Devils correspondent, our number one Devils vibe check guy. I texted him after the game that it felt like a 5-1 win, not a 3-1 win. And he said he thought I was being generous, essentially.
Yes, and it's true. I don't think I've ever seen Jack Hughes be as toothless as he was tonight. He was swallowed up. There was no real moment where I was scared of him. There was a moment where Jesper Bratt showed maybe some of the most incredible speed I've ever seen from a player, had a breakaway all by himself. Somehow Quick didn't even have to make the save, and Brad shot it so hard it ended up in the Devil's zone. It was a litany of errors from the Devils, who had recently fired Lindy Ruff and have seemingly ready to try and get the number one overall pick next year. I don't really know what they were doing, but the Rangers took it to them all game. And that starts with what happens with, obviously, Mika Zibanejad breaks his 5v5 scoring streak that was on since December 23rd. Can't even believe that's a real stat, but Mika marches here. And then Matt Rempe screens the goaltender. I mean, let's just break this whole thing down. Let me read the Larry tweet because it is fucking incredible. Let me get it. You hear me typing. Very good. Good podcasting. Great. Here it is. The final minute of Rempe's game included an ozone face-off win over Heischer, going in front of the net to set a screen to score a 2-0 goal, then elbowing Siegenthaler in the head to get a major and a game misconduct before waving to the New Jersey bench while leaving the ice with 30 seconds remaining in the period. Wow. I was going to come on this show tonight and we were going to have a lot of good things to say about Rempe. And there was a lot, like, I almost kind of wanted to have a revelation conversation, but the elbow to the head kind of kills all that on the spot.
Yeah, let's be very clear, because, you know, Devils fans don't listen to this podcast. And frankly, I think Ranger fans, for the most part, at least on social media, seem to be, I mean, I also don't follow idiots, but most Ranger fans seem to be reacting pretty responsibly. Can't be doing it, Remp. Can't do it. That is a bad penalty. If he keeps his elbow tucked in, if he keeps it down, it's an unfortunate hit where a super tall player hits a not so super tall player and them's the breaks, but he throws the elbow. You cannot do that. I get that it didn't cost the Rangers tonight. The Devils, to me, feel like a team, frankly, Ryan, I don't think there's a team in the NHL more just going through the motions of the season than the Devils at this point. It was a 2-0 game, and the Rangers were going to have 4.5 minutes to kill on a penalty kill. A better team in a 2-goal game makes the Rangers pay. The Devils didn't. The Rangers got lucky. You just can't be doing it. I did see a tweet where I wish I had the name of the person that tweeted it, and I apologize for not having it. It was, if I had a nickel for every time Rempe got a game misconduct against the Devils, I'd have 2 nickels, which isn't a lot of nickels, but it's strange that it's happened twice.
That's a good tweet.
It's a great tweet. It's a great tweet. I saw it and I was like, that, you know what? Great point. Touche. This is well said.
Look, the kid, he's been incredible. It's hard for me to, I can't believe we're having this much of a conversation about a fourth liner. Like, MSG is chanting his name. We want Rempe. Laviolette is literally putting him out on the power play. They had him do a face-off tonight. He's one of the best stories in sports. He's fucking awesome. But you cannot be elbowing somebody in the face. And, like, I love the wave goodbye. I love the chirp. I love the smile. I love how much the Devils wanted to fight him tonight, and he laughed at them. Everything about that is awesome. But you got to take this part out of your game if you're going to be on this playoff roster. And
can't do it. Can't do it in a playoff game.
What's the number of games you think he gets suspended? My gut is 2. I think it should be probably 3.
That's tough. So remember that they treat tonight as a suspension. So 1's in the bag. He didn't even get a hearing for the first hit. I don't even think he got fined for the first hit against the Devils. So technically speaking, this is his first offense. I think there's a scenario in which it's an elbow to the head. The league has been really harsh on hits to the head this year. I'd say I wouldn't be surprised by 2. I think 3 would surprise me.
3 would shock me too. I think 2 is the right number. I think it probably should be 3. This will not affect the Rangers really in any way. Brodzinski will slide in. No problem. It'll be really an easy transition for them.
Nice to have depth, Ryan.
Yep. And Rempe, by the way, he's just like, he's been awesome recently. So and it sucks. Like when you're riding this kind of momentum, Rempe mania, whatever, just like this is, you want to keep playing. Don't elbow people in the head. And I think that's as far as this conversation needs to go, because he's, as far as I'm concerned, earned his ice time right now.
Yeah. Honestly, that's what makes it more disappointing. Frankly, it's that It was a gimmick when we first talked about it. A gimmick you and I apparently misread. One of the few times we've completely missed the boat.
I started coming around early, and I was like, I think we're misreading this. And I just can't believe it's gotten as big as it was.
But it seemed gimmicky at first, and it seemed like Big Tree Fall Hard a little bit. But he has been playing so well recently. And we talk about this with Vince at the end of our interview, after we go through all the machinations of the trade deadline, and how Rempe's on-ice metrics would indicate that he's kind of the perfect modern fourth-line winger. And that's what makes a night like tonight actually disappointing from him, because it leaves the Rangers shorthanded in a week in which they play five times. They have two back-to-backs this week. You put the team in a position where in only a two-goal game, they have to kill 4.5 minutes worth of a penalty to start a period. It's just unfortunate that a player who is making a name for himself in this fashion now has to fight off the goon allegations.
It is. It's super unfortunate. You talked about the schedule. Let's get to that.
Can I ask you a question here, though, Ryan?
Yeah, please.
So the NHL loves to throw shit in our face calling stuff rivalry week, right? The Rangers will play they'll play the Montreal Canadiens, and people will tell us, oh, it's rivalry week for the New York Rangers. Can I just run down the opponents for the Rangers this week?
Sure. I have it in front of me as well.
They beat the Devils tonight. Then it's the Hurricanes, the Lightning, the Penguins, and the Islanders. But we're not going to call it rivalry week. Not going to do it. Can't do it. Those are maybe, if you take out, actually, you know what? I'm going to be super disrespectful. You take out the Hurricanes and you put the Flyers in, those are the five biggest rivals in my lifetime. For the New York Rangers.
Agreed. Totally agreed. The Hurricanes were like sixth or seventh.
Yeah,
maybe ninth.
I'm sorry. I treat the Hurricanes like Braves fans treat the Mets. It's not a rivalry if one team keeps winning.
Yep. We've talked about it for years.
That hurt my heart to say, by the way.
I can actually hear the pain. I can hear the pain.
I'm
free training, everyone. Hope for everybody.
Hey, Edwin Diaz pitched today and he didn't die, unlike Garrett Cole, RIP.
But yeah, I was about to say, the Yankee fans not exactly having a great day. Sorry,
Yankee fans. Tough day for Yankee Giant. Well, actually, the Giant fans in my life are pretty happy today.
The Saquon stuff is phenomenal. It's so good. It's amazing. The stuff he was writing about Tiki Barber, chef's kiss. I can't get enough of it.
Man, Tiki Barber's a bit of a fraud. Just seeing Tiki Barber just continues to depress me about the state of WFAN.
One day we'll do a WFAN OT because it is wow.
This is so sad, Ryan. You know, we used to be a country.
We used to be a proper country. The Rangers play, including tonight, 20 games in 38 days. I believe during that span, they have two periods where they have three days off between games, or rather 2 days off between games. Otherwise, they play every other day until the end of the season, April 15th. With the playoffs likely starting a few days later. Mm-hmm. So this is a grueling schedule. You are playing rivalry week. The Rangers are playing as good as they ever had this entire season. Right now, they've been in complete control. They've been dominant. Quick and Igor have looked amazing. There is a significant amount of scheduled losses in these next 19 games. There are back-to-backs that are very unfair. Look, I know the Penguins are drowning right now, but at 3 o'clock against the Penguins in a Sunday 1 o'clock game against the Islanders is ridiculous. It is asinine. I can't even believe it exists.
Well, the schedule is even more frustrating, Ryan, not to cut you off, but I think this is an important point. Again, the New York Rangers played on Monday last week and then didn't have a game until Saturday. It's not like there weren't days available for the Rangers to play hockey.
They got to rest up, which is great. And they got to get everyone together. They got their trades done. And again, like we said, we'll go over all of those trades with Vince and maybe give our own thoughts here in just a second. But that's great. But now you're going to play the hardest stretch of hockey in terms of scheduling, heading into what is the hardest period scheduling, which is the NHL playoffs, which is pretty much every other day until you die.
It's unfortunate. It's avoidable. I think that's why it's frustrating. And it's going to come off as sour grapes to other fan bases because, listen.
No one listens but Ranger fans. It's totally fine.
Right. So fuck them.
And a couple Avalanche fans, yeah.
And FBI. And maybe the CIA. I don't know. I've said a lot of things about Yeah, I've said interns. A lot of mean things about Chase Utley, so I think some people have me on lists. But first of all, I'm right. Second, it's just unfortunate. It's frustrating because it doesn't have to be like this, but the schedule is the schedule. You got to play the games you got to play, which frankly, you know what? I said I only had one complaint about tonight, and it was the fact that we lost the bet, and then we went right into how Matt Rampe disappointed us. I do have another complaint now that I'm thinking about it. I need to remind everyone the New York Rangers have allowed one goal over the last two games since we've last podcasted. They are playing phenomenal hockey. The trade acquisitions look great. I want to talk about, once again, the Rangers having yet another version of a dominant third line that makes me so excited. Adam Fox reports to Morning Skate today under the weather and sick. You have traded for Chad Ruedel at the trade deadline, and Jacob Trouba is already out. So you have a roster with eight defensemen. Why did Fox play tonight? Why, with this stretch specifically, Ryan, that you just mentioned, five games this week in 7 days, two back-to-backs in 1 week, you have eight defensemen. If you're not going to give Fox a night off where he's too under the weather to participate in a morning skate, he's never coming out of the lineup. And that means you're just putting more miles on his legs before the playoffs, after coming off a season in which we saw the toll it took on Adam Fox last year to have as many miles on his legs as he did against the Devils. Why force it? Why did you trade for Ruedel if you weren't going to utilize having eight defensemen on a night when one defenseman is hurt and the other defenseman sure seems like he could use a break, Ryan?
Sure does. And I guess part of the only reasons they could think of is like, hey, we got to get these points because we want to win the division.
Right. It's not like they have a huge cushion on the Hurricanes. At the same time, you do have a cushion.
Could have beat the Devils without. Yeah, tomorrow, or rather when you're listening to this, maybe on Tuesday, today's game versus the Hurricanes is technically like a huge swing. The Rangers are at 88 points. Hurricanes are at 64. And the Hurricanes could make it so they're two down.
You said two numbers that don't really equate to each other there. Are you sure? Did you mean 84 for the Hurricanes?
What did I say?
You said 64.
Wow, that's incredible. They've both played 64 games. Yes. And the Rangers are at 88 and the Hurricanes are at 84 points.
Okay. We're like, yeah, the Rangers don't have a cushion. And then you're like, well, they have 24 points.
They're up 20. Yeah. Let's get to the Gunsel of things, should we?
Man, this feels like a year and a half ago at this point.
It does, but it's worth at least giving our own thoughts before we get to Vince. Because look, I think we say this with Vince as well. I don't want to repeat too much of our conversation with him, but I'm not really upset that the Rangers didn't get Gensel. I was sort of baffled that they didn't have a better right wing one option. He was not on our radar all season long. One thing I remember saying constantly was Drury's going to trade for somebody that we've not mentioned on this show all year long. Mm-hmm. Did we ever mention Rosolik one time? Maybe once.
People had, not us. And the reason we hadn't is what we said on OT. We just, from what we have, you know, what little we do here, we found it hard to believe the Rangers and a John Davidson-led organization would make a trade with each other.
So it did seem like Rosolik was the emergency option after the San Jose Sharks ended up trading Hurdle and doing their retention for 6 years to the Vegas Golden Knights, which I'll never understand.
Can I push back on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
I don't think he was the emergency option. We hadn't heard about him, so he feels like someone that came out of left field. But listen, buddy, we didn't hear about Frank Vetrano 2 years ago. You know what's interesting about Drury? It seems like he telegraphs one trade a year and then allows that trade to eat so many headlines that he's allowed to work in the shadows with all his other moves, because we saw Kopp coming. It seemed like Kopp was going to happen, I don't know, a couple weeks out from the deadline, and that was the big move the Rangers made 2 years ago. And then we saw Wennberg coming this year, and that seemed like the obvious. I think Larry started writing about him 6 weeks ago. And I think like Drury allows one rumor to get out a year to allow him to work in the shadows everywhere else. And it's interesting. I see you, Chris, is all I'm saying on that front.
It is interesting, and he did work in the shadows yet again. So Roslovic is the guy. So far, I've been very, very happy with the results. How could you not be? Two-game sample size, but the first line, I also didn't expect him to slide right into the first line. I thought they would leave Kako up there, but Kako has been, I don't want to say demoted. I think he's actually better served on the third line where he is.
I want to talk about that third line. I'm so happy with it.
It's amazing. The Wennberg Kako Cooley thing is fucking awesome. It's fucking awesome.
We'll stick on Gensel. I'll keep putting a pin because we've been too negative on this podcast.
Yeah, for how positive things should be.
Yeah. So we're gonna end before Vince on nothing but positivity.
Let's do it. So Gensel gets away, which is fine. Yes. I think that the Rangers weren't willing to go all in on a guy like that. And part of the reason, at least I think, is because they didn't want to extend him 8 years, whereas Carolina would love to give him an 8-year contract. They're pretty much begging him to stay in Carolina. And that's fine. That's cool. But to lose out, but they still solved all of their problems. Everything was solved. And it was done at a minimal price that might as well be free in the NHL. They traded away, a fourth-round pick and a third or second?
A second, a fourth, a conditional fourth that could become a third. And... Turner Elson.
Done, dude. Done. Like for what they got back, that's an incredible haul.
Yeah. Again, we say this with Vince, and I think we said this on OT too. The Rangers come out of the trade deadline addressing all their needs without trading a first round pick, Brendan Othman, Gabe Perreault, Brett Berard, Matt Robertson. They didn't trade a prospect. The only player they traded is a guy that was on an AHL only contract. But let's phrase the Gensel conversation this way, Ryan. What would have been an acceptable package in your eyes? Not don't tell me like, oh, I would have traded 2 seconds for him.
No, I know. I understand.
A deal you thought the Penguins would actually say yes to that you would say, all right, yeah, okay, I can do that. No problem.
I thought they would legitimately say yes to a first Othman and Kako.
But would you have done that trade? Because I think they would have said yes to that trade, and Drury didn't want to do that.
I am hesitant to do that. Hesitant. I would have done the trade. I would have done is a first Othman and probably Berard.
I mean, I would have no problem with that. I probably would have done a first in Kako. And frankly, if I'm trading Kako, I probably don't want to trade Berard. But I wouldn't let Brett Berard be the player that keeps me from getting Jake Gensel. So I'd probably say the most I would have paid was Kako a first and Berard. I would not have gone higher.
And they got what they wanted from Pittsburgh Penguins or Carolina Hurricanes. So
yeah,
that was it.
And you know, you and I aren't prospect guys. We don't pretend to be prospect guys. We try to be hockey prospect guys. You're also not much of a baseball prospect guy, if we're honest. Way to go, by the way, dropping your fourth round pick before the season even started. That's good asset
management.
Look, we're
not getting into fantasy baseball today. Do it on BSBOT.
Just saying. All I'm saying, just saying. I think Vince put it pretty elegantly coming up. And I, you know what? Just listen to Vince. He says it better than I would. It seemed underwhelming at face value. I think you and I were both surprised that it didn't include a guaranteed first round pick. But they got three prospects they like. We said this on OT. I apologize to everyone that we keep referencing it. But you and I, obviously, and I think every Ranger fan, and frankly, I think a lot of fans of other teams across the NHL would probably value Kaapo Kakko more than Michael Bunting. But it doesn't matter what you and I value. If he's a Kyle Dubas guy, he's a Kyle Dubas guy. And Dubas likes his guys. So if Bunting and Kako are on the same level in the eyes of the person trading Jake Gensel, there's nothing I can do about that.
There's nothing. And that's okay. But I thought Drury did a hell of a job. And now the lines feel more balanced than I can remember in a while. When Tarasenko and Kane got here last year, and I think it's important to kind of... I know your point is it feels a lot more like the Cop for Toronto deadline than it does the Kane-Tarasenko deadline.
I think it's a carbon copy, frankly, Ryan. I'm trying to think back to the moment in which Andrew Kopp, what his value was when the Rangers acquired him. I think his value was extremely similar to where Roslovic is now.
Kopp got a serious contract because of his performance here.
I know.
And in the playoffs.
He was a great Ranger, and I think it's changed how we kind of view his value at the time of the trade. But you know what's crazy? Can I ask you this question? I haven't asked you this before.
Okay.
Who do you think's a better player? Jake Roslovic or Alex Wennberg?
This is good. I do think it's Wennberg, but I think it's Wennberg because he's just more reliable and just safer.
Is the difference between the two players really a second-round pick versus a fourth-round pick?
Probably not. Only because one plays center, which is...
But Roslovic can play center.
He's not going to for us, and they know that.
I mean, the plan isn't for him to, but all it takes is one injury, and he's going to be back at center.
That's fair. I just... The way the NHL values centers, especially defensively minded centers,
I know it's a second just, round. Second I know, round but pick. it's just crazy to me because like it's the positional difference between Roslovic and Wennberg shouldn't be the difference in two rounds of draft picks in my eyes.
All Roslovic needs to do is get hot and make Mika Zibanejad be a better player in any way he can and skate really fast and drive play on that top line, and which he's done so far. And he'll be a very successful Ranger that we will talk about for a long time. And we'll try to trade from him 2 years from now.
I think Roslovic has been solid in these first two games. I can't say he's necessarily jumped off the stat sheet. The eye test, he moves quickly.
He's a very fast skater. Yes.
But listen, I don't think Roslovic is the reason why Mika Zibanejad took 7 shots tonight. But if he helped in any way, shape, or form, thank fucking God he's here, man.
Yeah, Mika's face after he scores the 5v5 is like a weight was lifted off his shoulders. He looked relieved. Oh my God, how is this taking so long? But hopefully that continues. Want to do the third line before we get to our interview with Vince?
Yeah, we don't have to talk about it long. I just, once again, that third line, it's humming. And now what we're really seeing is Laviolette's building trust in that line defensively. That line, Vince had a great tweet about this tonight. It was getting the matchup against Jack Hughes' line tonight. Now, caveat on top of caveat, Hughes has struggled essentially all year. That line for the Devils has struggled essentially all year. But that's still Jack Hughes out there. And we still know what Jack Hughes is capable of. And Laviolette was confident in that line eating those minutes against them. And they weren't just competitive. They were dominant. That line is so noticeable. Every time it's on the ice, we've talked about this in the past about how, yes, we'd love Kapokako to be the Rangers' number one right winger for generations to come, but there's such a significant matchup advantage having him lower in the lineup that it's making the Rangers deeper and dangerous, and it's making his line mates better. I think it makes Will Cooley's game more dynamic. It frees up space for him to move and be a net front presence. I think Wennberg's speed is adding something to that line that Brodzinski was able to do, but I think Wennberg does it in a different fashion that is opening up more on-ice opportunities. Simply Ryan could not be happier. I think I'm a sucker for a good third line. Since we've been doing this podcast, Benoit Pouliot is my god. I love myself a fun, hardworking, dynamic third line, but this line checks every box. Kako is a possession monster. Will Cooley's a good net front presence who's also not afraid to throw his body weight around. And Wennberg seems to be a 200-foot hockey player with speed. What more could you ask for? And if they're going to – if everybody hates Barclay Goodrow, I get it. But line is going to start eating the hard defensive matchups, you know whose game's going to improve? And you know who played pretty good the last two nights?
Yeah, Barclay Goodrow.
Barclay Goodrow.
Yeah, he did. There's something about Rempe like makes him a little better too. It's really strange.
Something about Rempe. Rempe's been good. Like that's again why we're so disappointed with his bad penalty tonight. It's a gimmick and the gimmick can get old and it's annoying. It's the fact that Rempe's been good on the ice. That's why I'm so frustrated that he took that penalty tonight, because not only did the Rangers go down a man, they went down a man who's been good. That it annoys me.
All right, let's get to our guest, Vince, from Aloha.com, obviously, and I plug him just a second. But before that, let's get to our sponsors, Transition.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, yo, it's time to tell you about our official ticket sponsor of this podcast. That's right, it's TickPick. Last week, I tweeted out during the trade deadline on Wednesday, would Wenberg use TickPick to get all of his friends and family there for his first MSG game versus the Blues on Saturday? Or would MSG hook it up? Was that an ad or was that an insider moment where Ryan knew an hour before the trade went down? Who knows? Who knows? But TickPick did hook it up and spent a lot of people to that game. And you can actually go to games because the Rangers, I don't know if you know this, have 20 games in 38 days. So if you want to go to a game, use promo code BLUESHIRTS15. That's right, BLUESHIRTS15 to get $15 off any order over $99 on TickPick. The app is super easy, and the difference is the price you see is the price you get. It's not like other ticket websites where you go check out and there's hidden fees, all that garbage. Who wants that? With TickPick, none of that exists. No fees. There are dear friends. Use promo code BLUESHIRTS15. Go to Rangers games. Go to any other tickets as well. And we'll see you there thanks to TickPick. Hey, we're back with the post-trade deadline guest we have every single year, Vincent Mercogliano. Z is his middle name. He is of Aloha.com, USA Today. You can find his podcast, New Ice City. He is a beat writer for the New York Rangers. Vincent, hello.
Hey, guys.
Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
How many years in a row have I done this trade deadline episode with you guys?
Boy. I think four now.
Uh-huh. I think every one since 2021, right?
Yeah. I think when Karp retired, you guys pivoted to me.
Karp was on a couple weeks ago pumping his book. Congratulations to Karp.
Okay. Still
doing his thing.
I still get really funny texts from him every now and then just about some random stuff that's happening in the game. But yeah, we keep in touch a little bit.
He's been on fire on Twitter. I've been thrilled at the way he's tweeting recently. So it's been amazing.
not holding anything back in retirement.
No, as he should not. Vince, before we get into like the trade deadline, couple things. First of all, how was the week for you? I'm assuming it was absolutely wild. This trade deadline, a little more different than the last couple. I know Drury kind of waited the first 2 years ago with Kopp and Vetrano, et cetera. But last year was Kane and Tarasenko, a little bit of a different pace. This was to the wire.
Yeah, Wenberg went down early, and you could argue that that was their biggest move. So that was a couple days early. But yeah, the week was just, it's a blur, to be honest with you. I mean, if you're talking about how it was for me, I feel like my head is just buried in my phone way too often and, you know, kind of ignoring my family. And then on the one day all week that I tell my wife I'm not going to work, you guys ask me to come on.
Yeah. that's on us, my friend.
Yeah. But you, as far as the Rangers, I mean, listen, it's to be determined exactly how this trade deadline will be judged. You knew that they had to make multiple moves, and they did plug all of the holes that they intended to plug. They got a right winger. They got a center, and especially with Trouba now being down for a few weeks, adding a depth defenseman, I think, is something that made sense for them. I don't think it was a high priority, but especially given the Trouba news, it made a lot of sense for them to do that. there was, I think, a chance that they were going to add even one more forward. I don't know if you guys have seen the report from Shang Peng about the Rangers having a deal in place with the San Jose Sharks for
Barabanov,
right?
Barabanov. I was saying it right the other day when I was talking to somebody, and now I'm messing it up. But yeah,
you're in a safe place.
I know, Ryan. anything I do, Ryan's probably done worse. They made moves. They plugged holes. Now, did they do it with the biggest, sexiest names? No. Are they going to come to regret maybe not chasing guys that were a little bit more established, a little bit more proven? That's possible. But I also think that there's something to be said for filling your holes without having to sacrifice your prime assets. And I think the Rangers found themselves in a position. I'm sure we're going to talk about a lot of specific guys, but I think there was one guy out there in Jake Guentzel that they would have been willing to spend at least one or two of their prime assets on. But once that fell through, once it became clear that Pittsburgh was going to take that offer from Carolina and the Rangers weren't willing to go to the level that they would have needed to go to make that happen, they pivoted. They did not panic. They did not overpay for anybody that I think they weren't sold on. I had been hearing in the days leading up to the deadline, they were definitely going to make multiple moves, but they weren't thrilled with a lot of the options out there. They felt like it was pretty thin. They felt like the asking prices for the guys that they were interested in were pretty high. And so I think what you saw was a pretty measured approach from Chris Drury. He knew he needed to make multiple moves, but in some ways, the more that I've processed it and think about it, especially because I do think that there is some upside, especially with Roslovic, when you think about the potential of him maybe in a winning situation, making the move over to New York, playing with some high caliber players. Maybe I think that's a guy who could play up. I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one who's made this comparison, but it does remind me a bit of the 2022 trade for Frank Vetrano, who, you know, a lot of fans wanted the Rangers to go and give up a first round pick plus whatever else to go get Vetrano. Well, they might have gotten a poor man's version of Vetrano for a fourth round pick instead. So that's exactly what they did in 2022. The Vetrano thing kind of came out of nowhere, and it obviously worked out pretty well for them. I think they feel like Roslovic has the potential to have that same kind of burst, that same kind of, I guess you could call it, you know, stretch where he gets really hot than the way that Vetrano did, especially when you think about him being in a spot where he's highly motivated because he's in a contract year. So he's trying to set himself up for this summer. And he's coming into a situation where he was in Columbus. Everybody knew that team wasn't going anywhere. I think, you know, a lot of people felt like there was some bad stuff happening around that team, even going back to the training camp when they had the whole coaching fiasco. So now he comes to a situation that's much more stable. He's going to be playing with high caliber players. And so they feel like he's going to get a boost from that. And so you think about the moves that they made, you think about them holding their first round picks, not giving up any prospects at all. You got to feel like, okay, well, maybe they did some pretty solid bargain shopping here. We got to wait to see how it plays out, I think, before we have a definitive answer. Maybe we do look back and say, you know what, with this core, a lot of these guys being 30 years older, the championship drought being at 30 years, Drury should have been more bold with the way that he acted. But he's been pretty bold at a couple of these trade deadlines, especially last year, and it didn't work out for him. So I think there was some lesson learned there as well. You don't always have to chase the biggest stars, the biggest names. You just have to find guys that fill the specific roles that you need. And I know internally the Rangers feel like they did that. So we're going to see how it plays out. But it's not like they did nothing. They just didn't go out and make the big splashy headlines that I'm sure some fans wanted to see them make.
Yeah, Vince, let's jump back a little bit here and go back to Monday after the game against the Panthers, back when none of us, especially in the fan base, thought Jake Guentzel was a realistic trade option for the New York Rangers. If you just told the fan base Monday night that by Friday the Rangers would have addressed a right winger, a center, a depth defenseman, and AHL depth, all while only giving up a single second round pick, so they kept their first, they kept Othman, they kept Kako, they kept Gabe. If you told the Ranger fan base that they were going to address every shortcoming on this roster by Friday without trading serious assets, wouldn't the general mood have been, that's pretty good, well done?
Yeah, and my sense, you know, you guys have your finger on the pulse of the fan base just as much as I do, but my sense is that I think the more that fans have processed this, they do feel pretty good about the deadline. There was the initial disappointment of, well, they look like they're in on Gensel. Maybe they're going to get him. I think a lot of fans had their hopes up for that, and rightfully so. And then I think from there, everybody was like, oh, well, we got to get somebody big. So everybody wanted Buchnevich, which was never going to happen. People were talking about, you know, whoever was out there. Vetrana was, I think, a realistic option for them, but they just weren't willing to pay the price that it would have taken or took to get him out of Anaheim. Obviously, nobody was, because he stayed in Anaheim. Same thing with Buch. So it just was kind of this wave of emotions, I think, for fans, where, like you said, they weren't thinking about Gensel. I really wasn't thinking about Gensel very much until Tuesday. I started hearing whispers that the Rangers are lurking on this. And then by Wednesday, Thursday, it was like, well, you know, they seem like one of the teams that's really trying to make a push for this right now. But then by Thursday afternoon, I heard that Carolina had an offer that Pittsburgh seemed to like in hand. And if the Rangers were going to beat that, they were probably going to have to pony up either Perreault or two of the other young forwards, whether that was Kako, Othman, Cooley. So the Rangers weren't willing to go to that length. They drew their line in the sand. They didn't cross it. And they let Gensel go to Carolina. Maybe in some ways they drove up the price for Carolina a little bit, although I don't think that's the main reason that they were in it. I do believe they had genuine interest in the player. They just weren't willing to sacrifice, I think, either their number one prospect in Perreault or two young forwards who could come back to haunt them in the same division with them. I believe it came down to Gensel. I'm sure we were going to talk about this. I'm probably going off the question a little bit here, but I believe for them to get the deal done, they were either going to need to include Perreault, or they were going to need to include two of the three between Kako, Othman, and Cooley, and they weren't willing to go to that length. So once that happened, they had to make a pivot. And again, I know the fan base wanted them to pivot to maybe some of the bigger names that were at least rumored to be out there. They did not do that, but I do think it was a pretty calculated approach, and I do think that not panicking just for the sake of appeasing that need to have a big name was probably the right approach given everything else that we saw go down in those last 24, 48 hours.
A lot to respond to there, Vince, but with Gensel overall, I had a feeling, or at least people I was talking to felt like the Rangers were down to the bottom two. It was just the Rangers and Carolina. And what was sort of underplayed, and I know the prospect return for the Carolina is what a lot of people would call light. I am not a prospect expert. I rely on others to tell me if those are good prospects or not. It is underplayed that Bunting was also in that trade, and that is not a nothing player. And I think that, like you said, Drury not giving up Kako, Othman, Cooley, and a first, or two of the three of those and a first, seems like one of those good moves, because you look at a player like Lindholm, and I think at the beginning of the season, if you told the Ranger fans that they would be able to trade for Lindholm, and then they would be maybe thrilled. I think we looked at Lindholm as a good option, a flexible player that Drury might like. Vancouver traded for him, and now they're looking to trade him again. So you just don't know, like, when you get players like Gensel, like, am I going to hate Gensel going forward? Most likely, yes. Will he provide value for the Carolina Hurricanes? Yeah, also most likely. But the Hurricanes also might sign him for 8 years. They might try and get that deal done, where the Rangers were never doing that.
I wouldn't say never, but it was definitely going to be difficult for them to fit him into their cap beyond this season. It was definitely unlikely that they would be able to retain him. So in all likelihood, you were talking about a rental. And I think, like, let's say, for example, Kako and Othman, because those are the two names. I do not have this 100% confirmed. I do not have anything for sure that the Rangers offered, so I want to be very clear and preface it by saying that. But I do believe that they entertained the idea of including one of those two guys, either Kako or Othman, in the deal. I don't know if they offered it. I don't know if they absolutely would have done that. But I do believe that they were at least to the point where that was a discussion. That was a point of discussion where, okay, maybe we would give up one of these two young forwards to get him. But I think in this case, what you saw was Pittsburgh prioritized having multiple young players. The draft picks, I think, were kind of a secondary thing for the Penguins in this whole negotiating process. I think what they really wanted was to take several shots on players that they felt like could make an impact on their lineup pretty soon. So that meant prospects that were pretty close. And the reality of the Rangers prospect pool is that Perreault is a very hot commodity right now. I heard that a lot of teams called and asked about Perreault and that the Rangers pretty much said no to everybody. He was like the one, I think, really solid, untouchable among that young forward group for them. And you look at what he's doing in the NCAA right now as a freshman for Boston College. He's lighting it up. So he's a guy that everybody feels like was a steal for the Rangers in this last draft and is clearly their number one prospect. But after that, you know, you're talking about Othman is a guy that a lot of people believe, you know, can be a top nine kind of forward in the NHL. There are some questions about his 5-on-5 production. There are certainly some questions about his two-way game. You know, his defense in particular, I think, is an area where the Rangers have really tried to have him focus this season. I think next year he's a very viable candidate to compete for a spot in their top nine, but you know, he's a guy who solid prospect, but I don't think tier A, you know, tippy top of the league necessarily. And then after him, there's a pretty significant gap. Cooley has graduated now. I don't think the Rangers have any interest in moving him. And then you're talking about guys like Adam Sikora, Brett Berard, Bryce McConnell Barker, Dylan Garand. You know, Zach Jones, I guess you could throw in that conversation as well. I think he's still the defenseman in the system that has the most value around the league, although his value, I think, has diminished a little bit recently. Somebody told me that teams around the league were viewing Jones as the equivalent of like a third round pick. Maybe certain teams that really liked him would have thought of him as the equivalent of a second round pick. But basically, what the Rangers have is a drop off after Perreault and Othman, whereas Carolina has a deeper system. And I did have a scout tell me after the trade went down that the three prospects that Carolina sent to Pittsburgh probably all would have ranked third or fourth in the Rangers organization behind Perreault and Othman. So that tells you that maybe Pittsburgh didn't get the high-end guys from Carolina's system, but they did get three quality guys. They went for quantity over quality there. They also get Bunting. So they basically got – they took a chance on four forwards there. So for the Rangers to match those four forwards, I think they would have had to pony up at least two appealing young forwards to the Penguins. And the appealing young forwards to the Penguins weren't guys like McConnell, Barker, and Berard, and Sikora. They were looking at guys like Perreault, Kako, Othman, Cooley, and the Rangers weren't willing to part with multiple of those guys. I don't even know if they were willing to part with one of them. Again, I think they discussed it, but I don't know if they ever offered one of those guys for sure. So that's the situation the Rangers found themselves in with Guentzel, and they weren't willing to go ultimately to the lengths that it would have cost to get a player that was probably only going to be here for a few months.
Let's talk about the guys that are now Rangers. Obviously, it's a one-game sample size, but boy, it's hard to complain about the one-game sample size we have under our belt. Obviously, people might be listening to this after the game on Monday. We're talking about the game on Saturday when they beat the Blues 4-0. Roslovic immediately slots in on right wing one. Super active, seemed to be extremely noticeable from where I was sitting. I enjoyed his game. He brings a little bit of difference from what Kako does on that top line, but it was effective. Wennberg easily had the more impactful game, saw exactly what he can do on the power kill, draws a penalty on an odd man rush while killing a penalty. These guys are here to fit specific roles, Vince. What was your impression of their immediate impact on the lineup?
Yeah, it's only one game, so I don't want to overreact. But what stood out to me, I think we'll definitely talk about the individual guys, but just it felt like the whole lineup kind of fell into place a little bit more. I felt like there's been a lot of games where you've looked at it, and even games the Rangers have won, where you felt like only one or two lines really had it going that night. Last night, it felt to me like all four lines made contributions in one way or another. Even the fourth line, in some ways, was kind of the most noticeable, the way that they were forechecking and hounding the Blues.
Vince,
and pounding
we'll get to
them.
That, my man. Yeah, the fourth line, sure, we'll get to, buddy.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. So I thought that it really seemed to strike a nice balance. Now, they've got some tougher opponents coming up this week. They've got a grueling schedule. This is six games in nine nights that they're in the middle of. So we're going to really get a good feel for what these new guys look like and what this lineup looks like with them in there. But here's what I can tell you, especially in just asking around about these two guys, Roslovic and Wennberg, after the trades. Roslovic, I did hear from a couple detractors. There's been inconsistency in his game. You know, one person from another team said to me, it's only flashes. He never really puts it all together for long stretches. My response to that was, though, like we talked about a little bit earlier, the Rangers are really only looking for like a 2 or 3 month flash here. If he can get hot right now and play some really motivated hockey, keep that motor running high for a couple months, then I think there is some upside there, because people still feel like there is some high end skill there for sure. There's really good offensive instincts there, and there is speed. And you look at some of the analytics and you just talk to people around the league, him in transition, him carrying the puck with speed in transition is one of the strengths of his game. And you look at that Columbus team, which is kind of a dumpster fire, but actually analytically, him and Johnny Gaudreau graded out as like the top two forwards on that team. So the underlying numbers for him in Columbus look really good. He's coming off of a stretch where he was hot. He had 13 points in his last 12 games with the Blue Jackets. So this is, I think, a pretty smart roll of the dice. Again, all you're talking about is a fourth round pick. If you make it to the Stanley Cup final, it's a third round pick. You will happily give that up if it gets to that point. And there are people who believe that there's upside. Actually, in talking to Adam Fox about him yesterday, Fox pointed out to me, I knew that Roslovic played in the NTDP. And that he was a first-round draft pick and a pretty highly thought-of prospect. But I didn't realize that he played on the same line with Austin Matthews and Matthew Tkachuk. So Fox said to me last night, he was like, you know, this is a guy who has shown that he has a knack for playing with high-caliber players and fitting into a line like that, which is exactly what the Rangers are looking for him to do. So I definitely think there are some things to like there. You want to see that motor continuing to run high. You want to see him shake some of those inconsistencies that some of the scouts and people I asked about him pointed to as one of his flaws. But the talent, the ability seems to be there with him to where this could maybe pop and look pretty good for the Rangers. And then Wenberg on him, he's a guy that I think, you know, you talk about maybe the Rangers settling. They don't get Gensel. They don't get one of the top wingers on the market. I think Wenberg was a center that once Lindholm went to Vancouver early, that was definitely a guy the Rangers were sniffing around on. But once that happened early, I think Wenberg was the guy that they set their sights on. I think Seattle was a team that they were waiting to see if they were going to sell, because they liked Wenberg a lot. And I also think Yanni Gourde, had he been available at a price that they could stomach, which I don't know if that was the case, but that was another guy who I felt like they were interested in. They were keeping a close eye on Seattle. So Wenberg, I think, for the role that they want him to fill, specifically a third line center who's going to be a really good defensive shutdown kind of guy that they can match up against opposing teams' top lines in the playoffs, that is the role that he played in Seattle. And he played in Seattle's top six for most of his time there. He actually led all forwards on that team in time on ice this season. The Rangers aren't going to use him as much as he was used in Seattle, but I think as far as that third line center targets that they were looking at, Wenberg was very high on their list. So that wasn't a situation where they settled. They kind of got their guy there. And you look at what some of the other centers went for, whether it was Lindholm, Monahan, Henrique, those guys all cost first round picks. The Rangers were able to get Wenberg without giving up a first round pick. So I know that they feel really good about getting him. And Greg, you touched on it. He looked good on the PK against St. Louis on Saturday. And his line, I believe Natural Stat Trick had that line with him, Cooley, and Kako out shooting the Blues 11-2 during their time on ice together. So that line, I thought, also looked really good with him there. So there's definitely some things to like about him for sure.
It's the white stick, Vince. They can't see it. It's an unfair advantage, and I love every second of it.
I want to get to the last piece that, or the last NHL piece that the Rangers traded for. Greg called the AHL piece like months ago. I'm sure he'll tell you. Long story short, I didn't know Trouba was hurt. I don't know if he's been nursing an injury. I don't know if he's been injured for a couple weeks here. I have no idea, but out of nowhere, he's out 2 to 3 weeks. To me, that was a big surprise. And then the Rangers trade for Chad Ruedel. I think with, on our side, Greg and I in particular were flabbergasted that the Rangers would go out and trade for defensemen. Look, it costs nothing. I don't hate the move. I generally like everything Drury does, which is maybe that's good or bad. Or maybe I'm just like trying to be team player, but the Ruedel move seemed shrewd, but I still don't really understand it otherwise, other than like maybe they don't think Schneider's up for a long playoff run and they want someone a little more safer with a little more experience.
There's a few things there. So I don't know if you guys saw, I wrote an article a little over a week ago now, I think it was, where I basically wrote that whereas the last few years, it always felt like the Rangers needed to add somebody on the bottom pair, specifically a left-handed defenseman. We saw them do that really the last couple trade deadlines. Last year, they go out and they get Nico Mikkola. this year is the most stability that they've had in that spot with Schneider and Gustafson. So it was not, in my mind, anywhere near the type of priority that it had been in years past. And I do believe that that's how they felt internally. But after that story came out, I had a couple people from other teams reach out and say, you know, teams love to have defensive-minded guys on their bottom pair when it comes to a playoff setting. And don't be surprised if the Rangers add a depth guy, not necessarily a guy that's going to knock Gustafson out of the lineup, but a guy that gives them another option, especially when you consider that teams that go on long playoff runs typically need to go more than six deep on the blue line. So I think that there was, you know, third on their checklist was getting another defenseman potentially if it made sense. Now, had they used up all of their available cap space on a guy, like, for example, if they went out and got Vetrano basically would have left them with no cap space at all. They wouldn't have had the ability to carry a full 23-man roster in that situation. But once it became clear that they weren't going to go that route and they were going to go with a little bit of a cheaper option because of the fact that Columbus was retaining salary on Roslovic, they had a little more wiggle room to now carry a full 23-man roster and carry eight defensemen. Because remember, they were never going to put Zach Jones on waivers, which would have been required to send him to the AHL. So unless Jones was traded, you knew Jones was going to stay on the roster. So the only way for them to add a defenseman like Ruedel was for them to have enough cap space to fit eight defensemen on there. And now, because they went with some of these cheaper options as opposed to the Gensels or the Vetranos of the world, it gave them the ability to do that. So you're going to see them with a 23-man roster here moving forward. And now that gives them probably the deepest eight guys that they've had as far as defensemen. And really, I think since I've been on the beat, will Ruedel be a regular in the lineup once Trouba is healthy? I don't think so. Although if Gustafson falters as far as the physical elements of defending and protecting in front of the net, I know that if there is a concern the Rangers have with him, it's his ability to move bodies around the net, his ability to defend in the really high danger physical areas of the ice. But I don't think they're looking to pull him out of the lineup by any stretch. He's been very solid for them. I think certainly a bargain for the free agent contract that they got him. But Ruedel protects them in the event of injury, which they have right now in the case of Trouba. So I think certainly they knew at the time that they made that trade that Trouba was going to miss some weeks, and that added motivation for them to go out and get him. And we'll see how it plays out. But I think the six guys they've used all year are the six they're going to roll with. But now they've got injury protection with a left-handed defenseman there in Jones and a right-handed guy in Ruedel, who is very different from Jones. I mean, he's not a big guy, but very defensively sound. The analytics defensively look really good. Jones is much more of a puck mover, much more of a guy that you expect to get a little bit of offense out of. So they've got a little bit of both now as far as their extra defenseman. And I think that they really feel good about having that kind of depth.
Yeah, you spend that many hours on the phone with the Pittsburgh Penguins, you have to walk away with the player. That's just the rules. Vince, one of the things Ryan and I have talked about more than anything on this podcast, we've talked to you about it, and obviously we were thinking this before the Trouba injury, and I think I know the answer now. We were hoping having eight defensemen meant that the Rangers the rest of the season were going to rotate guys in and out of the lineup, keep them fresh, keep them ready for the playoffs, because a big reason why the Rangers struggled against the Devils as that series went on, the defensemen looked slower and slower and slower. But now with the Trouba injury, I don't think that's going to happen. However, Jones as a seventh, Ruedel as an eighth, wouldn't this be the perfect time to give Fox a game, to give Lindgren a game, to give Miller a game, just to get them off their feet and keep them ready for April?
Maybe. I don't know if you're going to see that yet. Maybe once we get into April, you could see that. I feel like you've asked me this question before, Greg,
every time. It's my dream. Hockey's the only sport where these guys are required to play every night. Baseball doesn't do this. Basketball doesn't do this. Every other sport, guys get a break. In hockey, if you're healthy and you're not playing 82, you're looked at less, and it drives me up a wall.
You know what? I still don't think you're going to see a lot of it. I'll be clear about that. But I think this year, in some ways, there might be a slightly better chance to occasionally see it. Like if a guy is dealing with something that's relatively minor but could use a day, that would make sense. And I do think that Ruedel is a respected veteran who they're not going to want to let him go 20 games without playing at all. So you're going to see him get in the lineup at some point. You might see him get in the lineup on Monday against New Jersey, quite frankly. I'm curious how they're going to play the dynamic with with him and Jones while Trouba is out, because they threw Roslovic right in there. Obviously, they threw Wennberg right in there, and they chose not to put Ruedel right in there. And I think a big part of that is Zach Jones has been such a good soldier for them. He's kind of played that role, gone these long stretches without getting any game time and hasn't complained about it. And Peter Laviolette has made a point multiple times of praising his attitude, praising his work ethic, praising his selflessness, that I think they felt like it would have been a little bit of a slap in the face to him to have this new guy come in when Trouba goes out, when Jones in theory would usually get a chance to go in the lineup and not at least give him a game there. So I'm curious how they're going to play that for the rest of this week, because I do think they're going to want to get Ruedel in the lineup at some point this week, but how are they going to handle that with Jones? So that's interesting. Ruedel though makes more sense as a replacement for Trouba because both of them are right-handed, whereas Jones is left-handed. But even with the forward group, I think that you could make an argument that if a guy is dealing with something kind of minor, Johnny Brodzinski is another guy who is incredibly well respected in that locker room. He has been a really good soldier for them all year. Went a long stretch when they needed depth, when they were really short on available bodies, and he went in there and played any role that they asked him to play and did a pretty solid job for them. So I think even in the forward group, I do believe that Laviolette will look for occasional spots to get Brodzinski in there. I'm sure we're going to talk about the big man in a minute.
Literally right now.
Yeah, so I'll leave that. But I do think that you could see spots where he tries to pick to get Brodzinski in there for somebody.
Yeah, because Vince, you did the important thing there. Are we at the point where you can't take Matt Rempe out of the lineup? Are we there? Because I'm not just saying for... fans love him. It's great. I love him. Ryan loves him. You love him. His story's phenomenal. He seems like a genuinely sweet kid. This is wonderful what's happening, this in-season storyline. But beyond that, Vince, he's playing really well. His underlying metrics look phenomenal in his fourth-line role. Are we at the point where you can't make an argument for taking him out of the lineup?
Yeah, I don't put a ton of stock into the metrics at this point because the guy was playing like 5 minutes a night for his first, you know, 7-8 games. I don't think there's enough of a sample size there. But I will say this. Saturday, to me, was the best hockey game that he has played since he's been up. It was the best all-around game as far as the impact that he makes. And I think that there are legitimate questions about his longevity and whether he has everything that you want to really trust him, especially in key defensive situations when you know that line is going to be used in them in the playoffs. So I'm not ready to put my stamp on it 100% and say there's no way for the rest of the season this guy's coming out, he's going to play in every single playoff game. I think we need to see a little bit more to say that. But I will say, and I wrote this last night, I'm very much coming around on the idea, because initially all everybody was talking about and the reason that the fans got so excited about him and he became this guy that was getting attention around the NHL was strictly because of the fights. We had not seen enough of him within the flow of an actual game because he was spending so much time in the penalty box and playing only 5 or 6 minutes a night to really have a good feel for what kind of an impact he could make. But what we saw on Saturday really started to make the wheels turn, and you started to feel like, you know what, for the role that they're asking him to play, it makes a lot of sense. You know, I know that people feel like fighting and hitting isn't enough reason to justify keeping a guy in the lineup, but you're seeing how the effect of the type of game that he plays, what that does to the opponent. Barclay Gaudreau said this to me a couple weeks ago. There was that day when a million reporters showed up. It was right after that weekend in Philly and Columbus where he had those back-to-back fights that were just all over the internet. And all of a sudden you had the Wall Street Journal and ESPN and everybody showing up at a run-of-the-mill Rangers practice just to talk to this kid. And while he was getting all that attention, I went over and I sat with Barclay Gaudreau for a minute and we were talking about it. And Barclay Gaudreau was like, he was talking about him and Edstrom, but obviously we ended up talking a lot about Rempe. And he was like, listen, both of these guys, especially Edstrom, he was raving about the skating for Edstrom, but he was like, both of these guys for big dudes skate really, really well. And what I'm noticing out there on my shifts with them is that when we throw a puck in deep, like, you know, we talk about dump and chase all the time. You don't want to see guys like Artemi Panarin and Mika Zibanejad dumping and chasing a whole lot. Sometimes you got to get the puck deep, but you want to see those guys attack with the puck on their stick in transition with speed. But for that fourth line, for them to throw pucks behind the opposing team's nets, and then you have 6'8", 245-pound Matt Rempe bearing down on you. Gaudreau is like, I'm telling you, I see fear in these guys' eyes. I see that they are hesitant to go back and retrieve those pucks because they don't want this guy banging them from behind into the boards. And that was very noticeable to me in that St. Louis game. You saw Rempe win these one-on-one battles for these pucks. I lost count. I mean, it was like several times where it felt like there was a chance for a Blues defenseman or a Blues player to come away with a puck. They got there first, but because they knew that Rempe was about to hit them, that ended up resulting in the Rangers getting an extra possession. And when you're able to repeatedly do that and wear them down and kind of strike that fear into their heart that way, that is what Peter Laviolette wants from that line. So to have a guy on there who can consistently do that and change the way that the opposing team plays, there's value in that. And you're also, I think, seeing him make slightly better decisions each game as far as when he's throwing those hits and how he's throwing those hits and staying maybe out of the fighting stuff a little bit more, not feeling the need to do it every game, which I know Gaudreau told me and I know other guys have pulled him aside and had conversations with him. Don't feel like you need to be a sideshow. Don't feel like that's the only way that you're going to stick around here. Like, show people that you can actually play hockey. And I think that he's doing that in some ways. You see that he's got some soft little hands. You know, I still think there are defensive mistakes. I still think there's going to be positioning stuff.
How come they're not, Vince?
It's not going to be perfect, but I do think that you're seeing that he's bringing some elements to the lineup that they didn't have and that are creating this energy in the lineup. I mean, he's beloved by the guys in there, and I really do think that it's having a positive impact beyond just the fighting and the big hit occasionally. So I do think that there is increasingly merit that we're seeing to have him in the lineup, especially when you know he's probably going to play between 7 and 10 minutes a night. He played 11, which was a career high for him on Saturday, and that's because they had that big lead at the end. But he's carving out a niche, and he's bringing something different to the table, which I think we're seeing more and more is valuable.
Vince, final question for me.
Well, before that, Ryan, I just want to point out that if you watched closely, there was a specific defensive shift from Justin Falk where he saw Rempe, and you can see Falk shit his pants in the exact moment on the ice.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said. Like, again, I know there's this old school mentality. Like, you know, I tweet out the stats at the end of every first period, and people are like, why do you include hits in there? Nobody cares about hits. And I agree. Hits are not any kind of barometer for who the better team is on a given night. But I do think that when you consider being physical in certain situations and the way that that can change how another team might feel about going to retrieve a puck or going into a one-on-one battle, there is value to that. And Rempe is showing us that.
Actually, my final question is also about Rempe. I feel like somehow Greg and I have underrated him over the last couple of weeks, but the MSG crowd and the public have not. Last night, or rather Saturday versus the Blues, they were chanting his name. I think he's one of two players to literally be chanting the name, like Igor and him mostly. And Laviolette put him out on the power play. Like, it was like a, we want Rempe, and they put him out. Like, were you shocked that a coach that, look, that's fun. That's stuff I dream of. Were you shocked that that happened, even though they were up 4-0?
No, I wasn't shocked. Every game, what I've noticed in warmups, every game they put him at some point up on the big screen. They do that with certain players, but they don't do like the same guys every game. But I think the guys who operate those cameras and operate the scoreboard have recognized that that really gets the crowd fired up. So every game during warmups, they put Rempe a zoom in on him up there at some point, and the crowd just goes nuts. I mean, they love this guy. And there is something to that as well. Like, the energy that he brings, and there's such an enthusiasm. I think of all the prospects that I've covered who have come up to make their NHL debut, nobody was as juiced up and amped up and just like full of energy before they went into their first few games as him. I was actually, Sam Rosen and I were hanging out at his locker last week, name drop. And chatting with him a little bit. And Sam was asking him about, you know, do you still get nervous before these games, or now that you've played about 10 and you have them under your belt, are you feeling a little more comfortable? He's like, no, I get butterflies every night, and I love that adrenaline. I feed off that. That's exactly what I need to play my best. Like, he's just a guy who brings such infectious energy every single night. And certainly it amps up the crowd, which I think then has an effect on the players on the bench, but they also feed off of him. And I think that there's something to be said for that as well, that this is a guy that can really get the bench going. Of course, he can do it by fighting, but it's not just fighting. It's the way that he plays every single shift, and it's the way that he interacts with his teammates. And it's just the fact that this kid's got a big goofy smile on his face at all times and is clearly, you know, full of adrenaline and probably very nervous and has all these butterflies, but is using that in such a positive way that I think it's something that the team is really, really enjoying. And I absolutely believe that that is another factor for him being in the lineup, because I think if you compare him and Edstrom, Edstrom is a more polished all-around player at this stage. Edstrom also brings the physicality. He certainly brings the size. But I think Werenpy has given himself that little bit of an extra edge, and he ended up being the guy that stayed on the roster after the deadline while Edstrom got sent down, is just because there's more juice that the whole entire lineup gets from him being in there. So that is definitely, I think, a part of this conversation as well.
Vince, we're at time.
Well,
so
I want to say one more thing, and I know I say this, and I know that if we go long, Vince, your wife will kill us, and I got to tell you, I want to live today. Just remember the time when people thought Igor was done. Wasn't that fun? Wasn't that a great month in time?
He's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he's been awesome. Listen, it's bizarre, though. This guy, you know, he had that one season where he was lights out from start to finish, historic, you know, the best goalie season we might ever see for a Rangers goalie, but every other season that he's had, there's been extreme hot streaks and there's been extreme cold streaks. So I guess we kind of just have to expect it. But the cold streak he had, I mean, I didn't think he was done, certainly. I knew at some point there is enough evidence that we'd seen in the past that he would snap out of it. But like, I guess we just have to come to expect it, that he is going to go into slumps that can extend. I mean, in this case, the slump was like, you could argue 2 months, but now all of a sudden Now all of a sudden he's the hottest goalie in the league for a month. So I guess it kind of is who he is. And you just hope that he gets hot at the right time. And he does always seem to get hot at the end of the season going into the playoffs. So as long as he keeps that up, there's not really much to complain about. But I'm not going to lie, my eyebrows are raised going into the All-Star break too, when he had an .899 save percentage. And you're like, this guy has not been himself for like 2 months now. So, you know, I think there was some merit to worrying there, but I also think that, you know, this guy, when he's on top of his game, we know that he's one of, if not the best in the league.
He's back right now. Vince, I plugged you at the beginning. Do you want me to plug you again now?
No, man, it's cool. I mean, you know, I hope at this point people know where to find
me. Yeah, right? Like, if they're listening to this, they have to know. <It's> not... They know where to find you. Aloha.com, USA Today, etc. New Way City, all the good stuff. Vince, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Hey, we're back. Thanks for Vince for ignoring his family to be with us.
Oh, that was very nice of him.
I appreciate that. He's the best.
He's one of a kind. He's a great guy. Behind the scenes story about Vince. Vince knows what he's doing at all times. One of the smartest men you and I have met since we've started hanging out with people. By the way, shout out, Julie Stewart Binks showed up to the watch party on Saturday.
Amazing.
Just hung out with all of us, had a great time. Taller than I expected. Maybe I'm just fucking short.
We are short. Yeah. We are short.
I think that's what the problem is here.
Yeah,
but Vince intentionally logged on to do the interview. We don't use video. He knows we don't use video, but we're interrupting his Saturday or Sunday. So he logs on in a Yankee hat and goes, "Hey guys, did you see Juan Soto's home run?"
I mean, yeah. I mean, hopefully the Yankees can get it together.
Karma's a bitch, Vince. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Look, I'm not into injuries. I don't root for them. So
I don't root for them either, but you know, just be nice to Greg. Greg's had a hard week.
It's been hard for Greg. The Yankees and Mets are not a rivalry. You know,
Ryan, I'm the one that tells you that
That's why I'm just repeating your mantra.
I know. I'm just saying I've had a hard week.
If you want, everyone feels bad for you.
I demand the pity. Give Greg the pity.
Sorry. If you want to leave a 5-star question on the show, you can go to our Patreon, subscribe to our Discord. There's a 5-star question channel. We read them on the show every week. This week, Greg, a lot of questions are about food. I'm going to mostly ignore them.
Actually, this is an important point. At the watch party, shout out everybody who came out. It was fucking piss and rain all day in New York. And it was gross. And shout out to the great people at T-Squared Social. I think we're going to keep having our events there. They were wonderful to us. It is a wonderful venue. It's so convenient, right next to Grand Central Station. This is a free ad that I am doing for them.
Yeah,
but
we're not getting paid for that.
So. We're not. But everyone, all I heard were positive things about their experience at T-Squared.
Sweet.
So shout out to them. I know you are probably hosting a watch party.
I probably am on the 23rd.
So
that's correct.
I can't can't have more nice things to say, not just about the venue and the people, but also the people who showed up. Ryan, three different people ordered chopped cheese, pulled me aside, and said, "Hey, I ordered the chopped cheese because you were disrespecting it on the podcast."
Are you fucking serious? Okay, so one of the questions is this. Paranoid Android asks, "Born and raised in New York until 16, at least on Long Island, and visited multiple times a year for the rest of my life. So I have to ask, what the fuck is chopped cheese?"
Also,
I've never heard.
Sorry, not this question.
I've never heard of this shit. When did it become in some of New York food's sort of New York food staple?
I have no idea. Also, Paranoid Android, psychopath, came to the watch party, got back on a train to New Haven, drove from New Haven back to Boston to coach his kids' 6:30 a.m. hockey game the next day.
Wow. Dedication.
Dedication. But yeah, Listen, again, three different people pulled me aside, showed me the chopped cheese that they ordered. They looked great. I've never heard of this fucking sandwich in my life. It looked like a cheesesteak. I would call it a cheesesteak. It's not a New York staple. Again, if I go to a deli and someone says you have to order one thing, if it's not a bacon, egg, and cheese, it's the pastrami on rye. Every time.
BECSBK is the New York, like, it's language. That's what you have to do. I consider myself a food connoisseur, and I know I live in Philadelphia these days, but I spent 30 years in New York. I had never not once ordered a chopped cheese one time.
I can't even tell you for sure. I've seen it on a menu.
I'm so confused about this whole thing. I didn't want to talk about food, and here we are.
we needed to because, Ryan, it was a concerning – not a concerning. Concerning is not the right word to use. I feel like I've said that exact statement either about food or the New York Rangers exclusively on this podcast this year. But, yeah, three different people pulled me aside and said, "Greg, I ordered this because you guys were disrespecting." I'm like
– Not disrespect. I don't know what it is. Like, I've never – I know what a Philly cheesesteak is. Yeah, clearly. Uh-huh.
We live in weird times, my friend.
It's very strange. There's so many more food questions. I don't even know where to start. Let's go to a hockey one. It's from AZK. Way late on this, but Larry was saying our expectations of Igor were inflated based on his brief first season, like he didn't have an entire Vezina winning season at that level. I think Larry, and even Vince came on and was like, "Hey, I don't know if Igor is that guy all the time. He's either incredible hot streaks or... sometimes he can, like, look, he let up four goals a lot this year." And I get what they're saying. I just have a lot of faith in the man who can show that he plays at the highest level in the NHL and can be the best goalie in the NHL, bar none. That's not wrong.
I think I was one of the loudest calm the fuck down guys about...
I think the only person louder was me.
Yeah, you and I were pretty hard on the chill out guys. It'll be fine. Train.
Yeah.
I find it strange. And we're big Larry boys. I want this to be clear. And I think Larry likes us.
He's
at least tolerates
for a reason.
Us. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do find it strange that Larry, and not just Larry, other people, hold Igor Shesterkin to this extremely high bar that they seemingly don't hold Mika Zibanejad to. That's all I'm going to say.
That's a really good point.
Larry,
really good point.
My hockey dad,
he yelled at me, bro. He put you in the corner.
He gave me the, "I'm both disappointed and mad at you at the same time," because I said Mika Zibanejad has been a passenger this year.
He was like, "That's unfair." Whoa.
At the same time, he would say something like, "I don't know about Igor Shesterkin." And I'm like, I find that interesting, Ryan.
Which one is it?
If you hold Igor to that high standard, why can't we hold other people to that high standard? That's all I want to know.
Don't worry, Larry, we'll be back on the show. This is from Tony G, 5144. "I understand the desire to go, quote-unquote, all in, considering the franchise history. Mm-hmm. But when has it ever worked? Sather attempted this from 12 to 16, and we had nothing to show for it except a completely barren farm system and bad contracts. We still have a lot of good young players and a goalie you could build around for the next 6-plus seasons. I don't want to trade Kako in a first. It would probably take way more than this. Just for one first-round exit, Gensel had been fantastic playing next to Crosby. I'm skeptical of his impact on our top line." And by the way, Tony, I think you're totally right to feel this. Gensel is a good player, but he's not the change your life and change your franchise sort of player. Maybe he is for the Carolina Hurricanes. I'm not sure he was for the Rangers. Is that weird?
I don't know about that comment you just made there. I do think... It truly is magnificent how quickly some people in the fan base went from "we need Gensel at all costs" to, you know, he's played a lot with Sidney Crosby.
Yes.
Like, no, but it was, my head spun. I was like, what? You wait, hold on. Is he bad or is he good? I'm confused.
No, he's been legitimately very good away from Crosby as well.
Yes. And also, yeah, Crosby has made him better, but it's not like he's not an exceptional player. To answer his first part, I saw a lot of people saying, well, the Rangers went all in 1994, and they did. The problem with them going all in 1994 is most of those trades sucked. They kind of won with the pieces that they already had. One of my biggest, I don't want to call it pet peeves, but gripes? It's not a gripe. I'm just not a real Esa Tikkanen guy, and I know that he played an important role in that team, but you just can't convince me that Doug Waite also wouldn't have done all the things Tikkanen did himself. So I can't call that trade a loss for the Rangers, but I hesitate calling it a win. In recent memory, I mean, the Avalanche, we don't consider the Avalanche going, I mean, they made some fucking moves this year.
They really did.
It's difficult because a lot of the good Avalanche moves have happened in the offseason leading up to the year. So we don't consider it an all-in move, but like, Devon Taves was an all-in move and an incredibly stupid move.
Savvy.
By Lou.
Incredibly savvy.
Most great teams, and this is the point Larry tried to make in that article way back when he said, look at the last X amount of Stanley Cup winners, how many of them have traded a first-round pick. Most great teams don't have huge holes in their lineup where they need a big bomber to come in and help them. But, like, you know, all-in trades do work. The 2008 Brewers wouldn't have been anywhere without CC Sabathia. I know they didn't win the World Series, but that was an all-in move. Surely the Yankees and the Mets both have made huge deadline. Would the Mets have made the 2015 World Series without Yoenis Cespedes? No the fuck not.
No way.
So,
no way.
You know, teams that do go quote-unquote all in, it's not oh forever. It's just that most great teams don't need to take big swings. That, I think, is the easiest way to describe it.
Next question is from Trav Shred. For all-time NYR Men Rockets who can get it list, where does Wenberg rank? Above or below Brett Howden?
Ooh,
it's above and it's not close.
Yeah, it's high.
Look, he literally had like a whole controversy where his wife had to come out and say, I know my husband is too hot. Thank
yes.
you.
Yes, yeah.
You on the top of the Man Rocket list.
That's also a tough one in the industry, I believe, is the industry term that we would use to describe that little... Yeah, I didn't need to know what book talk was. I think that's where I come down on it.
I also did the research when we traded for Wenberg. So I had a reporter tell me, do you know this is the book talk person? And I went, what is that? so that drove me down an interesting rabbit hole. This is from Talk to Seamus. Conspiracy corner again. It's not uncommon for the Rangers fans to split Drury's tenure into two parts. His first week and everything since. Which one in your estimation did or does Sather have his hands more on the wheel for? Whoa. This is an interesting question.
No, we want to blame Sather because it's easier to think your messiah. By the way, we have to pick someone to just name them Wadib moving forward on this year podcast that we acquired. They will, the Lisan El Ghaib will show themselves. I'm not going to announce who it is. We'll figure it out. I trust Javier Bardem to tell me which guy is my savior by the end of this
season. I
actually
don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
Go see Dune 2, Ryan. Why don't you go to the movies? Support the industry.
Sorry. I didn't see
Dune
1.
Probably didn't even watch the Oscars last night.
I didn't.
Loser.
I don't care.
Jesus Christ. My God.
So,
you know, we had Ben Norris on this podcast. You can't support his art?
I support Ben Norris. My wife watches Abbott Elementary all the time.
Oh, such a really good Bradley Cooper cameo in the episode last night.
Didn't even know. Congratulations.
Damn it, Ryan. You don't even support your wife? Who do you support? Like, let's run through this.
I didn't watch Abbott Elementary today. We were watching Sumo today instead. Sorry.
I'm sorry. It's been you had a whole day. You could have watched anything.
We watched Sumo.
Unreal.
Spasha's on.
You guys,
very important.
What's the, Sather didn't have a role in anything with Drury. I think we need to get off this crutch.
Yeah, I think at the time there was a lot of rumors that Sather was involved again when Drury had his transition. I don't think, I can't say for sure Sather did anything, and I think it was all Drury, and no matter what, I just, it's Drury's moves, so he has to go on him, no matter what.
Yep.
Zangarang, if you had to put money on it, which one of Roslovic or Kako has more time on ice on the right wing with Kreider Mika in the final 20 games? Well, now that I know, how much money could I put down?
Yeah, leader in the clubhouse. But again, I just hope everyone is able to see and appreciate all the good that Kako is doing in the role that he's currently playing.
Agreed.
These first two games, he's been loud, noticeable, and phenomenal. He had a goal against the Blues. Probably should have had one tonight, if not for a couple great defensive plays from the Devils. So I don't want people to see Kako playing a third line role and go, bust. I know some will, but whatever. They will do it anyway.
He's been really good. This is from Dead by Zamboni. Oh. Hey, I got an idea to get Mika going. How about flipping Mika with Trocheck so he's centering Brett and Laugh? And I remember Hedl having success with them before getting hurt. Is this idea worth trying, or is line two as untouchable as it is? It is untouchable. It's just electric. And I think somehow March is starting to seep into Mika's veins.
Again, the most important thing from tonight for me, 7 shots on goal from Mika Zibanejad. How many times have you heard me on this podcast, Ryan? When that man struggles, what I want him to do is shoot more. And it's like he's getting the message now. 7 is an outrageous number for any player, sans, I don't know, pick your Oiler. That's what I want to see from him. We need more of this, please, Mr. Zibanejad.
This is an interesting name. ASAP, BSAP, CSAP.
Oh.
Okay. Do you anticipate Drury considering another trade for Tuk in the offseason? By then, incorporating Kako into the trade with an expiring deal might be feasible, and the Rangers could potentially feel reassured, especially since they could promote Berard or Hoffman to fill his role. I don't think the Buffalo Sabres are trading him at all.
No.
One of those doing your job situations.
Yeah, sorry. For multiple reasons, too. Number one, they love him. Actually, for 3 reasons. Number one, they love him. Number two, they want to be good next year. Number three is from the region. The Sabres didn't want to trade him this year. This was the Sabres aren't going to trade him, period.
I can't tell you how much the Sabres want to be good. They really, desperate. Really want to be good. They can't figure it out. They want to be good.
The Mittelstadt trade was not them selling. They think Bowen Byram is going to help them more in the future than Casey Mittelstadt. That simple.
Yeah, and a lot of hockey people think that Buffalo stole. I've seen a lot of those. That's how I know it was a good trade. I've seen both sides being like, wow, what a steal. For both sides.
Yeah, good old-fashioned hockey trade, Ryan.
Correct. It's from Gump116. Post-trade deadline, how would you rank the Rangers' possible first opponents for who would you want to play? Mm. Possible matchups are Flyers, Islanders, Penguins, Devils, Leafs, Red Wings, or Lightning. Based on that list, who would you prefer to have an easier first-round opponent by finishing second in the Metro or home ice in the later rounds?
I don't like this game.
You're going to try and win the Metro.
I don't like this game because I don't want anyone to be like, I don't want to get clipped. Okay. That's why I don't like this game.
I'll do it.
I also have vivid memories of 2015 in our waiver wire Facebook group when the Mets swept the Cubs and it was Blue Jays Royals in the ALCS. Some kind soul asked the group. There are multiple Met fans. I'm the loudest, but I'm not the only one. And someone simply asked, who would you rather the Mets play in the 2015 World Series? My exact post was, the Royals have less talent, but goddamn, they just won't die. But probably the Royals. And it haunts me to this day.
Yeah, I know that was the exact comment. The fact that you can quote it is really telling
in a lot of ways. I carry it. My therapist says, my therapist does these interesting things. I think he thinks all my issues are rooted to my relationship with my mother. And I don't think
he's quite... Oh, I thought you were going to say the Mets.
Well, I don't think he understands that it's the Mets. Like, I think he thinks... Maybe the problem is, like, every time I reference the Mets in therapy, I refer to them as parental figures. And he's like, oh, interesting. So you hate your mom? And I'm like, Oh, what I meant to say, I said Mets. Like, I think you're just like hearing me wrong.
That's so funny. I will answer this question for you, Gump116. I would like to see the Flyers or the Islanders in the first round.
I don't want anything to do with the Islanders. I don't want a single fucking thing to do with them, Ryan. They are playing great hockey right now.
They are. It would be insane. By the way, you mentioned the Penguins in this list, my friend. No, that's not happening.
Yeah, right.
Red Wings Rangers would be Kane hell. I do not want
that. Oh, God. Yeah, just cut my wrists now. I'm not going to say shit. I don't want to live in this world.
More questions. MW33, Will Smith and Ryan Leonard both have the draft status to leave college and sign their ELCs after this year. All three, including Perreault, have had the success to make the jump. If both Smith and Leonard sign their ELCs, does this mean Gabe does too, even if it's just for Hartford? I have no idea what Gabe wants to do, and he'll do whatever he wants. Like, I know he's probably good enough to play in Hartford. Does he want to do that development? I don't know. Maybe he wants to stay in college one more year. I don't mind either way. He's developing the way I'd like.
Yeah, I think the heart of the question is, if he loses the two best teammates that he's currently playing with, is his development better served playing in Hartford than it is staying in college? Like, if he stays in college with inferior teammates, do we enter where we were with Brennan Othman, his second or his final year in juniors, where you and I were frustrated? That's tough. I don't know the right answer to this, because I think this is a harder conversation than the one with Othman, because I think the organizational expectation for Gabe is, when he signs, he's staying in the pros, in the NHL. I don't think the organization wants him to go the AHL route. He plays in the most competitive conference in college hockey. So he's playing the best of the best on a daily basis in the United States, which is great. And personally, this is a hot take, I think, for some people. While there is more talent in junior hockey, I think the level of competition in college hockey is significantly higher. So I think Gabe's development for a second year in Boston is more advantageous than Brennan's. I'm on a first name basis with these guys, by the way. Second year or final year in the juniors, when it was clear that, like, he just shouldn't be here anymore. It's a difficult one, because if Gabe signs his ELC after his freshman year, I think Ranger fans will expect him to be on the Rangers next year, when I don't think that would be great for him.
No, he needs if to he take
stayed,
his time.
But if he stayed in college one more year, then signed his ELC, I don't think it would be an outrageous expectation to see him in a Ranger jersey immediately.
I also think it would be good to give him like 20 games in the AHL, have him prove his way up, and then call him up like they did Hedl. Same situation. So give him one more year in college. That's up to him. Maybe he wants to make some money. I get that.
I
get paid.
Yeah, I don't know what the ELC life is like for college hockey players. I imagine he's doing pretty okay currently.
Yeah, I'm sure he's fine.
But this is actually, hockey still might be the one sport where, like, $900,000 or $925,000, whatever it is now, might be more than he's making at Boston.
I would say so. This is from Carbar IBAP.
Okay.
Are you ready to entertain the idea that Rempe is going to stay with the team and have a role moving forward? He brings a different element to the team, and the crowd is undeniable. Brodzinski is insurance, the odd man's out. Thoughts? We were wrong, and I've eaten my crow.
Yeah, well,
we did the ranking a lot. I always had Rempe number one as the first person out, period.
Yes, I would agree. And he's the one person that stayed. Both Edstrom went down. Brodzinski is the 13th.
Correct. And I think both of them are better hockey players than Rempe, but what Rempe does is undeniable. You are correct.
Here's my thing. I was worried it was all gimmick. That's where we, after that first Devils game, if he was going to be a guy that would just fight every night and take dumb penalties, I get that, like, there was a blood sport portion of the fan base that was rah-rah, this is great, old-time hockey's back. That's not for me. I was not enjoying that. I would rather that lineup spot be better used. That's why tonight was so frustrating, because Rempe has proven he's a good hockey player. So when he does stupid things, and it hurts, potentially hurts the Rangers in important games, that will frustrate me. Not because he did this, not only because he did the stupid thing, but because he himself is good. And I just want him to stay on the ice.
Next question is from Slurps. Do we miss Bonino?
I knew.
You know, someone asked, he might have been the guy that asked me this at the watch party. I think he did it as a joke. If he didn't do it as a joke, I apologize. Well, I took it
we
as
don't
a
miss
joke.
Him at all. I wish him the best. I would say we do not miss him even a little.
Yeah, and how many times do we have to say it? Like, I do feel a little, I don't know if I feel bad for him. I think, you know, he's had a wonderful career.
Had a really nice career.
But he was forced into a role that he wasn't capable of playing or expected to play. That's what happened at the end of Bonino's Ranger run.
From V for Vinegar, or Vinegar? Vinegar. Vinegar, as in the League of Legends character. There we go.
Okay, that's short, whatever.
Who on the Rangers could ride the worm? I'm assuming this is a Dune reference.
See, now, okay. Oh, great. Now you get the Dune reference, but you didn't get mine. That's fine. Whatever.
I had no idea what you were talking
about. Sure. No, great. Whatever. I hear you, Ryan. No problem. Boy. Well, I mean, again, guys, all these questions is Chris Kreider. Because Chris Kreider.
It's Chris Kreider.
every answer to every question is probably Chris Kreider. If you want the non-Kreider answer.
Chris Kreider.
I'm trying to think. Who's kind of psychotic?
I'll answer the next question while you think on this one.
Well, did you see the Kako quote from over the weekend?
The country songs?
Yes. I hope he never leaves, man. He's fucking funny. He's hilarious.
He rules. Their music sucks. I'm way better. Yes, that's true. The next question is from Batchild. Is PowerPlay 1 completely lost out there? Is it time for a change to this top unit? They're creatively bankrupt and incredibly predictable. They are winning games while the power play is terrible, and they are trying to figure out how to get it good again. And while there has been adjustments that have been made to put more pressure on the power play and make them less uncomfortable and not be able to perform, they're just not going to put Lafreniere on that top one, which is what you should be doing right now if you want to change power play one, is put Lafreniere up there. Maybe take Mika off or whoever else you want. You pick, other than Adam Fox and Panarin, probably. Everyone else has to stay, or everyone else can be interchangeable. Actually, can Chris Kreider even move? I have no fucking idea. He's incredible. But they're not changing, period. They want to get it going, and they got to figure it out.
Have you taken a step back, Ryan, and thought for just a second, a literal second, think of the things that we have worried about this year at different times. Igor Shesterkin went into one of the worst slumps of his career. Mika Zibanejad, Ethan will tell you he's been fine. Ethan, I love this bit that Ethan's doing, by the way. Big fan of it.
Yep, same.
Mika Zibanejad hasn't been Mika Zibanejad. Power play one since the Fox injury hasn't been power play one. The defensive pairings at times have looked suspect. Keandre Miller has not had a consistent year. Outside of Panarin, Trocheck, Lafreniere, and Cooley, I think probably Jimmy Vesey, you'd be hard pressed to say. I already said Panarin. You'd be hard pressed to say forwards are having some of their best seasons, and yet the New York Rangers sit atop the Metro Division post All Star break, and frankly have been atop the division all year. It's crazy looking back at how many times we've felt. The New York or the fan base has felt the New York Rangers have had serious problems to take stock and say that this team is still 4 points better of a Hurricanes team. We expected to lap the New York Rangers this year. I don't know.
And also
point
the Devils team that they just beat to also lap the Rangers. Correct. I had the Rangers as a hard third in the Metro.
I would say comfortable third is the terminology I would use, but third. They would not be higher than third. And yet, I don't know, man. Crazy year. I don't know if they were the best team in the league.
Multiple times. That is fucking crazy.
I mean, they're riding an insane hot streak right now. They lost once in February, right?
Yes. And they lost two games. One was in overtime. And that four-game stretch, whatever. They're great. This is the last question from Suck My Kako. Nice. How amazing was it for Torts refusing to leave the bench after getting ejected? I mean, classic Torts.
I fucking love
Torts. Awesome.
I again,
he's the best.
Him and Terry Collins occupy the exact same space in my mind, which is I love them. I never want them coaching my favorite team ever again, but I love them.
One of my favorite things was that Friedman had to tweet out, like, yes, I know we're all laughing and phrasing torts for not leaving the bench, but the NHL didn't find it so funny.
No shit, Fried. God love Fried. He plays an important role, but we get it, man. You are the voice. At times, you have to be the voice of the NHL and the voice of reason. I don't know. Maybe just let us enjoy our thing for like one night.
Yep. All right. That's been the show. We'll be back Thursday night this week. Two more games between then. Wow. And get ready for the long haul here, because there's a lot of Rangers hockey coming up, and then we head to the playoffs where it's do or die, my friend. So you can follow me on Twitter at OrionMedia. You can follow Greg at Blue Shirts Break. We'll be back next week. Love you guys. Bye.
Hey, it's me. I'm whispering. That's right. It's the end of the show. It's after midnight. You see, Greg and I finished recording the show, and some stuff happened. I got busy, and I still had to record this part, but everyone's sleeping, and it's really late, so I'm going to whisper. I'm so tired. What am I doing? I'm going to whisper our NHL Insider Club members' names over the next minute or two, of which there is now 105 of you, you absolute psychopaths. How dare you be such great supporters in this time of need. Adam Cohen, Adam Curtulo, Adam Keach, Alex Flynn, Alex Gartner. What is wrong with me? Amber Cohen-Sparker, Andrew Rotter, Anthony Gray, Anthony McCauley. That's not how you say it. Oh, it's so late. I'm so sorry. Anthony Monturo, Anthony Tenegretta, April Erickson, Ari Zanger, Rangers ASMR, Ben Waters, Rangers MSR, ASMR is not a name of a supporter. I'm just making a joke. Ben Waters, Ben Weber, Bill Olson, Bill Rattel, Bowen Greenleaf. Bowen Greenleaf. There's something about whispering Bowen Greenleaf that is absolutely insane. Brandon Lekos, Brandon Magnum, Rick Ranger, Brian Doherty, Brian Doyle, Brian Gallagher, Brian Mallon, Brian Sotavia, Brian Farrell, Cassidy Rollman, CZ, Chris Finelli, Chris Haru, CJ Seldwagon, Conrad B. Demich, Daniel Delaney, Daniel Dezen, David Naradin, David Siegel, Dennis Deitz, DJ Banana Jazz, Dr. Kruger, Dylan Breschneider, Eric Stack, Gabe Valley, Garrett Reynes, Give Gartner a Cup, Greg Gretzky McFly, two different people there, Harrison Hasko, Hella Vanilla, Hip Hip 89, Ian Usher, Jack Bagley, Jack Grogan. Is this what the Oscars is like? They just like name, they do these names like this. Jake Keith, James Masker, Jarian Marquez, Jason Stumer, Jason Zembrowski, Joanna, John Hardesty, Johnny Shea, Johnny Thundercock, Jordan, Joseph Sirico, Josh Kestenbaum, Josh White, Chris from Florida, Carl Carl Schwingen, that can't be right, Cried or Die, Lee Plummer, Leshik, Gronowski, Lou Giordano, Matthew Goodwin, Matthew Kine, Meatball the Cat, Mike Koenig, Mike Bucklaw, Mike Mancuso, Mike Pasternak, Nate Hanafy, Neeks, Neil Grover, Palms for Prez, Nicholas Di Nicola, Other Slash, Pascal Perrier, Paul J. Smith, Pavel Kodarev, Phoenix Ignition, PJ Cisbaro, Randy Tesser, Ryan Sieb, Ryan Watch Miracle, Swingart, The Drop BK, Tommy Sinclairy, Tommy Tedeschi, Tony O'Neill, Tony Gregory, two first names, Tori from Manhattan, Vinny Bracco, Vinny Hay, Will Spector, and finally, Winston, the Golden Retriever. Bark, 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 bark. It is so late. I am recording this podcast, and thank you so much for supporting it. All right, we'll be back later this week. I usually have a rant this time, but as you can tell, I'm hallucinating from how tired I am. I love you all. Goodbye.